We're glad to have him with us, a friend that's grown to be a personal friend, incredible organization, great person, and works his butt off. Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, the AAM. They're a partnership established by some of America's leading manufacturers and the United Steelworkers Union. Now, for over a decade, Scott and the AAM have worked to make American manufacturing a top-of-mind issue for voters. The midterms proved it was, still is, and also for our national leaders. They do it through effective advocacy, innovative research, and a savvy PR strategy. More than a pleasure to have back on the show, Scott Paul, president of the AAM. Hey, Scott, good afternoon. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday to you, Leslie. It's always great to be with you.
It's not just the economy, stupid. We saw in the midterms. There are many things that surround work, manufacturing, unions, jobs, and broken promises by the president. The president made a lot of promises. He promised to increase the number of jobs. He promised to stop or reduce the number of factories closing and going overseas and to bring those jobs back to America. But despite us hearing him chanting about building a wall, he doesn't seem to want to talk about facts, and we need to look at the facts. So first question I have for you, Scott, is the president delivering on bringing jobs back and reducing factory closures? I know that last month in November, when we look at the job numbers, there were 27,000 new factory jobs in November in the manufacturing sector. They added 27,000 new factory jobs. That is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And over a year, the sector added 288,000 jobs. So is the president, should he tout this? Is he right to? Or does that number fall far short of what he promised and what we expected?
Leslie, that's a fantastic question. And I think that it's important to look at some of the context here, which is we've had a pretty good run of factory job growth since the end of the last recession, in fact, starting in 2010. And so we added a lot of jobs in the Obama administration. We didn't quite, you know, we didn't add enough, in my view, but we were adding jobs. And so Trump inherited a pretty good manufacturing economy, there being a couple of exceptions to that. And so he put the tariffs on to try to help steel and aluminum. In fairness to the president, those industries have added some jobs. They're good-paying jobs. They pay $90,000 or so. So that's nothing to sneeze at. But by the same token, he's also the beneficiary of very strong fundamentals that he inherited, and he kind of jump-started, I guess, the manufacturing economy a little bit with this big corporate tax cut, and it has lots of negative connotations. But one thing that it did was speed up business investment, which probably meant a little more hiring. Although at the same time, Leslie, and this is the big downside, it probably means that the end of the business cycle, which means an economic downturn, is going to come sooner. Now, the thing the president hasn't done and that he talks about all the time is to bring down our nation's trade deficit. And he tweets about this constantly, as you and I both know. And the fact of the matter is, despite some of the tariffs, and probably in large part due to his monetary and budgetary policies and fiscal policies, the trade deficit has continued to go up and up and up, and it may hit some records before we get to the end of the year. And so I would say at this point it's a mixed record, that there are some things that he's done, and I would say that, you know, industrial state Democrats called for some of the things that he's done on trade for many, many years. And so some things that he's done okay with, others, he's far from fulfilling what he said he was going to do for manufacturing communities.
And when we look at why this is important, somebody would say, well, of course, you're the president of the AAM. But Scott, can you paint the bigger picture as to why the manufacturing sector specifically is so essential to America, to jobs in the United States? And as a huge, big thread in that interwoven, fabric of our nation.
Yeah, I'll start. start with the economic and I'll finish with the political and social reasons. And so the economic reason, and even though manufacturing is certainly a lot smaller as a percentage of our economy than it used to be, it has an outsized impact. It's because manufacturing jobs pay more, so its workers are spending more money in the rest of the economy than you'd get from most workers who are in services or retail. And those are important jobs, but the fact is they just don't normally pay as well as manufacturing jobs. The second has to do with innovation and research and development, and manufacturing drives a lot of that. And when we don't make things here, a lot of that research and development will soon follow. There are a couple of outliers like Apple that simply throw a lot of money at solutions, but otherwise it's really hard to maintain that technological edge. And I think that the moving on to the social reasons, and I think more and more people are aware of this, when you get those plant closures like you have that General Motors announced, that obviously impacts workers in those communities, but the community-wide impacts are tremendous. And the simple fact is that an Amazon warehouse or a hospital or a Walmart or any other type of economic development that community may attract, even as the factory is leaving, is not going to make up for the difference. And those communities are forever altered. And that has had social consequences for the United States, which are quite measurable. And, you know, social scientists, including the Nobel Prize winning Angus Deaton and Case at Princeton, have shown that we've seen mortality rates go up. We've seen deaths of despair, opioids, all of that kind of increase in concert with this deindustrialization has had this negative impact. And finally, I'll just close with the political. And this should be obvious to folks. You know, manufacturing jobs are particularly important in states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan. I think there's a lot of folks in those states who feel like politicians from both parties forgot about manufacturing. They might show up during the campaign with a hard hat on and meet workers, but after the campaign's over, they probably feel like those politicians disappear. And the difference that Trump made is that they probably don't agree with Trump on everything, or perhaps not much of anything, but the one thing he said he was going to do was to fight for those workers and to speak in a language with respect to trade policy that they understood. And there's probably, you know, and it drowned out a lot of the other voices that have been working on this for a long time, people like Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio, for instance. And so this has had a political impact, obviously, on our country that we're still feeling today.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the president of AAM, Scott Paul. We are talking about manufacturing and the labor report on jobs, specifically in manufacturing, this past month of November. But we'll also talk after the break about China and about a company named GM and the layoffs there. More to come. If you want to join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Join us back after this. We are back. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Scott Paul, president of the AAM. We've been talking about the jobs report in November, specifically 27,000 added to manufacturing, or 27,000 manufacturing jobs added in the last month of November. We've heard more about that. We're going to talk about GM. Before we talk about GM and specifically the GM layoffs, I would like to talk about China. And I would like to talk about the trade talks with China, which are vital. The president has said things, done things, and then done and said things different than we've heard him say in the past, or acted in a manner different than we've heard him say in the present. What does he need to do going forward if you were to sit, as I've asked you before, on his shoulder to whisper in his ear during those talks?
Leslie, thanks. I'm not sure that anybody whispers in his ear, but I will give it a shot. And I will say, this is an issue, our trade challenge with China, that has been a bipartisan concern for a very long time. And if you ask the folks, even in the Obama administration, one of their regrets, it would be that we didn't confront the China issue as much as we should have. So the administration is right to focus some attention here. Are they going about it the right way? I think that's the big question. And so far, you have some level of tariffs in place on some Chinese products, a threat to escalate that, pending the outcome of a 90-day sprint of negotiations that's going to be led by our trade ambassador to try to unwind about 20 years of unfair trade practices that we've seen come from China. That is a tall order for anybody to do, for the most capable negotiator in the world to do. And so I do have, obviously, some skepticism about what can be accomplished in that time frame, but I do want to say, and here I agree with Senator Chuck Schumer, Senator Sherrod Brown, Senator Ron Wyden, who sent a letter to the president saying, don't back down on China. Don't accept a deal for selling, some more oil to them or some more soybeans. We need a comprehensive agreement here, and I'm totally on board with that, because even though you may not feel it directly, I may not feel it directly, our economy absorbs a lot of loss as a result of some of these unfair trade practices coming from China, stealing intellectual property, stealing trade secrets, forcing us to make products in China to sell them there rather than exporting. We've had a lot of well-paying jobs that we've haven't been able to hold on to, or that we haven't been able to create because of this problem. And so I'm hopeful that we can get this done, but it is hard to tell. And this is the really frustrating thing, Leslie, is that, the president, depending on the day, is going to tweet one thing or tweet the next thing. And I think it's hard for any of us to know what direction this is headed. And and I wish there were a way to change that. I don't think there is. But we just all kind of have to buckle down and hold on. And that's certainly not the way to run a country or to run trade policy. But he's right to focus on these problems, because they've been problems for a long, long time.
Oh, most definitely. Let's go to Brent on line 3 in Columbus, Ohio. Now, Brent is a former USW president for Local 1777. Brent, thank you for holding. Welcome, and we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, well, thank you, Leslie, and hello, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for all that you do and have done. I'm a former local president, and I'm no longer in that role. I have my own business now elsewhere, but I still stay in touch with a lot of the guys, and particularly in Trumbull County and Mahoning County, where some of the president's policies have helped and now have seemed to have drastically hurt or have been hurt. They're having some internal turmoil in their locals. And that's very concerning to me. I mean, even things that used to be pretty easy lockstep, like Senator Brown, who's been a champion for our labor movement for 25 years or something of that nature, we're finding, or they're finding, some difficulties where we used to have, almost lockstep support for Senator Brown. We're losing some of that inside of our locals. That's very, very concerning.
Scott?
Yes, I totally appreciate that point. And particularly on trade policy, there is no question that this president wants to use it to drive industrial workers away from the Democratic Party. And I think the question to me is, will the Democratic Party allow that to happen, or will they follow the example senators like Sherrod Brown in Ohio, or, as I mentioned, Chuck Schumer in New York, who have been very aggressive about pushing back on this and essentially saying, we're glad the president agrees to our long-held positions on trade. We need him to act responsibly as well as to actually get some things done. Because as of right now, you know, he's put the tariffs on steel and aluminum, and certainly the impact for the steel and the aluminum workers has been a pretty positive one. Although what he hasn't changed, and I think this is really, really important for working people to understand, is the balance of power between labor and corporations. And so, you know, it is a, you know, and he hasn't prevented things like the General Motors layoffs from happening. And so there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And when you look at the broader record when it comes to standing up for working people, it's a much cloudier picture. In fact, it's a negative picture when it comes to this president. And so I'm going to obviously support any policy that is going to help working people in this country and to work on the president with trade when we need to. But I'm also going to hold him accountable when we need to do that.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk more about this and also get to the conversation about those GM layoffs. We are back. Scott Paul is president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, the AAM. Be sure to check out the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. On Twitter, Scott Paul AAM, at Scott Paul AAM, and at Keep It Made in USA. And we might touch upon that depending upon time. The GM layoffs. Really, when you look at decades of individuals putting in such hard work, is this how the American worker that was working at GM, at General Motors, gets repaid by GM? Is this how GM repays decades of hard work, Scott?
Yeah, this is what makes my blood boil, Leslie, is that you have these big companies, and when they need something from America, like the auto rescue, they'll come and they'll ask for help. Otherwise, they'll say, you know, keep your hands off, and we'll be okay. And then you get to a situation like this where instead of, I think, sitting down with the workers and saying, look, here's our issue, these cars aren't selling, let's figure out a way to make it work, they announced these layoffs, 14,000 jobs in Ohio, in Michigan, in Maryland, that will have a ripple effect, obviously. And they're going to make products like the Chevy Blazer down in Mexico and sell them back in the U.S. market. So that says two things to me. The GM's first and only loyalty is to its shareholders, to its investors, to people who own its stock, and that bond that we once had, where there was this kind of what I would call stakeholder capitalism, where companies realized that they had to care about the communities in which they operated, the workers who provided their blood, sweat, and tears for the company, as well as their skills and their labor, and finally, their consumers, their customers, that those are all secondary factors now. And this is probably a much broader question, and I might be getting too philosophical here, but it's like, can a big capital-intensive company like that operate that with quarterly earnings pressures that you see from Wall Street, trying to squeeze them every day? And I think it's exceptionally difficult to that, but GM clearly made the wrong call here, and they're being held to account by, you know, for instance, the senators in Ohio, Rob Portman and Sherrod Brown, in Maryland and Michigan, are obviously quite concerned about this. And I think the question we're all asking is, why didn't you try to work this out with the workers in advance instead of viewing them as so disposable?
And that is a good question. This is something that could have been avoided, right? And then what do people say, especially Democrats, when, you know, there are other individuals that go, not just hard work, but money, the bailout, right? I mean, you know, is this how you repay taxpayers?
Yeah. So there obviously was the massive rescue, the bailout that was, you know, nearly 10 years ago that saved GM from oblivion and probably the American auto industry as well. And even more recently than that, the company has sought and received tax breaks, as well as the larger corporate tax break, and has been able to reap the benefits of that. And unfortunately, and again, I guess this is the thing, is that, you know, most of that money has gone to please its shareholders rather than to invest in its workers or invest in its facilities or to retool or to prepare for electrical vehicle making or the autonomous vehicle revolution or changes in the auto market. And they're taking the easy, old-fashioned way out, which is just to close factories and to say to the communities, well, we're sorry, you're going to have to deal with a generation worth of social and economic strife, but we're going to wash our hands of it. And that's an approach that I don't think that anybody should accept. And I guess the thing to me is that, and I'll just, you know, this may be a little impolitic, but, you know, the president likes to use his bully pulpit, and he uses it to harm a lot of folks. Why not go after these companies a little bit and hold them to account? I mean, he used to at least talk a good game about it, even if the jobs went overseas, but he doesn't seem terribly interested in trying to hold GM to account either.
I want to talk about something that you said on C-SPAN, and I want to make sure that I get the exact quote here. This was when you were in an appearance on C-SPAN. You said, and you stressed, that GM can elect to bring production of its more in-demand vehicles to the idle plants if it wishes to honor its workers' loyalty. Why won't they listen? This seems like an easy fix, because you're talking about 14,000 jobs, and one of the ways people retaliate is not buying their products.
Well, right. Yeah, and there's obviously people will speak with their pocketbooks on that as well. And, you know, by contrast, and this is just interesting to me, you know, just a few days after General Motors made this announcement about the layoffs, Fiat Chrysler announced that it's going to build a new plant in Detroit. So it's possible to competitively make an automobile in the United States, but the easiest thing that GM saw that it could do was to offload all of these problems by shedding its workforce. And this is a question that Senator Portman and Senator Brown, bipartisan duo in Ohio, asked Mary Barra, the chair, the CEO of General Motors, you know, why? Because she argued to them, she says, well, we can't just unilaterally reverse this announcement now. and they said, well, why not? Because you unilaterally announced it in the first place. So it seems like you could reverse course and try to get this plant back in action, making a product that people are going to want to buy, and that's the real head scratcher here. But this is unfortunately all too typical behavior from big corporations that don't have a lot of accountability and that get a lot from us and from the U.S. government in terms of tax relief, in terms of tax breaks, in terms of regulatory relief, and don't uphold that loyalty in any sense other than to their shareholders.
Let's take another call in the Bronx. We go to Michael. Michael, good afternoon. Question or comment for our guest, Scott Paul, president of the AAM.
Hello, Leslie. Hello, Scott. You know, I'd just like to remind everybody that when Trump said that he would rescue the GM company, I didn't believe it for one minute, not because he's just a chronic liar, but just a clear example that it's applicable. We all remember what happened with Carrier, right? Another job that was outsourced, and he claims that he was going to help them, he was going to save them. They voted for him, but then they were duped.
Scott, did you want to make any comments regarding what you heard?
Yeah, Michael brought up a good point, and we probably have to reach all the way back to even before President Trump took office to remember this carrier announcement. And for your, just to remind your listeners, it was a plant in Indianapolis, Indiana, that made high-quality HVAC equipment, heating and ventilation and air conditioning equipment for residential and commercial spaces. And the company had announced that it was going to close down the plant and literally move the operation to Mexico. Trump tweeted about it and then followed up with Mike Pence, who was still the governor of Indiana at the time and soon to become the vice president, and announced this big deal, and that he was saving this factory, saving these jobs. I think the challenge is that it wasn't all that was cracked up to be, and there's still hundreds of workers that were laid off, and part of the factory still went to Mexico, and the company's not investing nearly as much as anybody had anticipated into this factory in Indiana. And so, you know, it laid off about half of its workforce, and it got money to do this. It got $7 million in tax breaks. And so it is this is quite typical where you get the big bluster on Twitter, but at the end of the day, the policy falls short, or the follow through falls short, and that's exactly what happened in the case of Carrier.
Scott, I wanted to know is what GM has done and the response that we're hearing, not just from unions, not just from politicians, but from the general public as well. Is this an indictment on GM's greed, on General Motors' greed?
Yeah, so I think that remains to be seen, but there's obviously the right amount of upset being directed at General Motors, and people remember the auto rescue, and as you recall at the time, it was very controversial. There was a lot of opposition to it. It was at the very beginning of the Obama administration, and there was so much criticism directed at the administration and at the companies and at General Motors. But at the, you know, as Joe Biden said, you know, the 2012 slogan for Obama and Biden was Osama bin Laden is dead and GM is alive, and it was one of the shining examples of success in the early part of their administration. I think the challenge is, and this is, you know, conservatives and Republicans in the Congress over the course of the Obama administration cut programs that would help GM and other companies invest in new fuel-efficient and alternative energy cars. And, you know, the Trump administration is rolling back fuel economy standards as well. And so those smaller cars, it's harder for them to make them competitively in the United States, and there's less of a market for it if everybody can just go buy a luxury SUV and a pickup truck and not have to worry about the fuel economy. I mean, that's bad for our climate in the long run. But that's kind of where fuel prices are right now. And so I think if I were to give any unsolicited advice to consumers, you know, it's to look out for brands that are made in America, made by union workers that are fuel efficient. I know that there are plenty of those, and to reward the companies that are doing the right thing. Unfortunately, investors rewarded GM. Their stock price went up when they laid off 14 or 15,000 workers, which shows just how perverse Wall Street and its behavior can be on Main Street America.
Scott, you talked about rewards. I want to jump from money and from jobs and from corporations to voters. Who will the voters reward and who will the voters punish for this? I say that because we know from Ohio that there was a meeting with GM CEO Mary Barra by Ohio Senators Portman and Brown two different parties, Portman, a Republican, Brown, a Democrat, both of them urging GM to act on opportunities to bring new production to the plants, as you had mentioned and you had recommended on C-SPAN, as you are recommending here today. This is something that is unusual, but there's bipartisan support, certainly bipartisan support for not losing jobs, but keeping and gaining upon American jobs. Politically going forward, who does this help? Who does this hurt, if any?
That's a great question. Well, I think that voters know authenticity, and we're nonpartisan, but I'm just going to use Sherrod Brown as an example here, where he's a Democrat who, for the last 25 years in his House and then in his Senate service, has tried to distinguish himself as someone who fights for blue-collar jobs and someone who opposed the North American Free Trade Agreement, opposed the China trade deal, and has been really, really tough on trade for a long time. And he outperformed any other Democrat in that state and a lot of other industrial state Democrats as well. And it wasn't by saying, well, Trump is doing too much on tariffs or Trump is doing too much on trade. It's that I'm the authentic one here. I stand up for blue-collar workers all the time. I look out for their health care, for their safety on the job. I look out for their income, and I look out for their trade policy. And to me, if I'm someone looking ahead at 2020, I would look at the kind of campaign that Sherrod Brown run, and I would say, well, there's reason to be encouraged here, but it's not to say that tariffs are bad or this trade policy is bad. It's to say I can do it better, and I'm more authentic, and I'm there for workers around the clock, not just when voters are about to cast their ballot.
Scott, the time just flew. Of course, we're going to have you back because I want to talk about many other things and extend our conversation on this issue as well. Thank you for joining us today. I know you're busy and for taking the time. We love having you with us. I always learn a lot. I know our listeners do, and it's certainly enjoyable as well as enlightening. Thank you. Scott Paul, president of the AAM. Like I said, you need to follow him on Twitter at Scott Paul, AAM, ScottPaulAAM, and also follow at Keep It Made in USA. Go to the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. One of the great things about their website is they can tell you some great made-in-America products. It's great for gift-giving ideas as the holidays approach.